Back together again, you and I wrapping up a very busy week, Friday style, April 28th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We wondered up front if the No Labels group would be able to get a line on Connecticut's 2024 White House ballot. And former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep Chris Caruso joined us in the 5 o'clock hour to chat about some of the week's big stories. So I'm talking with a friend of mine last night, and we talk every so often, and this friend of mine knowing what I do for a living, and this person saying, you know, she says, you know, she kind of envies me because it's fun to get on the air. She must say, and just talk about what's on your mind. And I say, yeah, I said, yeah, but you make a lot more money than I do. But seriously, we're talking about something, and she says, can you explain something to me? I said, well, I'll try. You know, a lot of times my explanations make zero sense. By the way, it's Friday. Hi. And she said to me, she goes, I've been reading all this stuff about these polls that have been coming out. I said, yes. I said, what polls? She said, oh, the polls about, you know, what looks like it's going to be Biden and Trump. And I said, yeah. And she said, well, I'm reading where, like, what, 55 or 60% of Americans don't want Trump again. I said, yeah, that's probably the same poll you saw, the Harvard-Harris poll. And she said, yeah. And she said, did I see some poll where like 70% of Americans don't want Biden to run? And I said, you are correct. Yes. And this person's not an uber political person, but they do like to keep up, as most people do. And she said to me, she goes, well, wait a minute. I don't get something. I said, what? She goes, if these percentages are so high, then why does it look like this is going to be the choice again? I said, well, there you go. That, my dear, is the $64,000 question, or 640 grand. Let's multiply it by 10. Since the game show, the $64,000 question was the subject of a scandal back in the 50s. But I said, yeah, that's a pretty good question, ain't it? And I've talked about it with her and some other people and people and you know, people who don't really follow this stuff like a lot of you and I do here, especially when we gather every Monday through Friday from 2 to 6 to chat about the goings-on of the world. You know, these people are like, well, wait a minute. If you have clear majorities of the U.S., of the populace, no matter who polls them, that say, I don't want this guy to run, and I don't want that guy to run, so why are they running? God, that's a great question, isn't it? Ha ha! Oh, my God. So that leads into this. And by the way, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Once again, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How did we get here? I'll ask that to kick things off on a Friday. How did we get to the point in what I firmly believe is still the greatest country on the earth, the one place that millions of people would and do come to on the drop of a hat, from impoverished areas, from relatively prosperous areas that still want to experience the American dream, and they come here and they want to be an American, either to go to college or to live here and work or to eventually become an American, and even with our faults and foibles, the system kind of works, right? We can get here. You and I can cry and moan about this stuff for 4 hours every day. But if we take a break and we, you know, get up and stretch and we walk outside during the break and look around, the world functions. The U.S. functions. We scream and yell and get under each other's skin. But we function. There's enough political oil in the block that keeps on turning and everything is, you know, kind of sort of good. And we function. I get that. But how did we get to this point? And again, I know you're probably saying, ah, you're bringing this up again. Yeah, because it's important. That's why. Because, and you hear the amount of times it's the lead story on our national news when people all over the country, don't, trust me, they're asking this in Connecticut, in your own neighborhood, in your own backyard, in New York, in New Jersey, all around the tri-state area. They're asking this all over the country. They're looking at each other. Democrats and Republicans are looking at each other across the aisle and saying, are we really going to do this again? When solid majorities of people say, no, somebody else, please. Someone else, please. But the party bosses don't want to hear it on the Republican side. The staunch right-wing MAGA types for Trump don't want to hear it. The hardcore left that see Biden as this sort of puppet to keep the White House in their control, they don't want to hear it. They're not for advancing the country forward. All they're doing here is duking out anger. This is like, you know, occasionally, it doesn't happen as much as it used to anymore, but in the goon era of the National Hockey League, you'd see fighters, brawlers on one side or the other fight twice a game. Oh, yeah, well, they're going to go again. Maurice, when they get out of the box there in the third period, watch him to go again. Oh, here they go. The gloves are off and the fists are flying there. You know, it's like when guys used to go twice in a game. Now it's once, and they all wink at each other, and they go to the penalty box, and the guys that were brawling are all in the same golf tournament 2 weeks later, signing autographs with each other. But, man, this is just, this is mind-numbing. And again, you have now finally, and it's good to see, on one hand, but the pushback here is expected. It's good to see that there is at least one group that has the money to stand up to the powers that be in the Republican Party and in the Democratic Party, saying enough of this craziness. And it doesn't mean you have to disagree or agree with everything Republicans stand for. It doesn't mean you have to agree or disagree with everything Democrats stand for. But this notion of the Democrats nominating an 80-year-old guy who, according to Axios' story, and we'll get to that later on, is essentially only functioning between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m., like your mom and dad when they got older, or your grandmother and your grandfather, on that side. And then the Republicans want to renominate, apparently, a guy who was going to have a multitude of criminal cases and civil cases against him. What? This is the best we have? Why and how have we descended into this utter lunacy that is making up the American process by now? So you would say, well, let's go centrist. Let's go third party. And there's an organization trying just that. But guess what? Guess what? The parties that be, the big Democratic power brokers and the big Republican power brokers, they, for once, it looks like they are genuinely afraid this time. And I'm glad. It's a NPR story here that's been flagged a few places about the No Labels group. We talked about them. Remember, and this is a group apparently that it has got private donors, anonymous donors, and they are powering up. They have tens of millions of dollars here, and they have made it on to the ballots so far in Arizona, Colorado, Alaska, and Oregon. I hope they make it on the ballot here. And I don't want to hear from the state Republican Party. I don't want to hear from the state Democratic Party. Well, they're not a real party. See, this is now what the powers that be are starting to argue here. They're starting to argue, well, No Labels is kind of phony. They're not a real party. Well, if they're not a real party, what are you so afraid of? The group says it's not interested in running a presidential campaign nonetheless. Says here, they're committed to raising roughly $70 million to gather signatures to qualify for the ballot in 2024. Good for them. So far, no labels is on the ballot for 2024 in Arizona, Colorado, Alaska, and Oregon. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to be running people in those states, but they want their intended purpose is to scare the Democrats and the Republicans into not being lunatics anymore. One of their spokespeople insists that no labels is a one-ticket operation, a presidential insurance project for dissatisfied Republicans and Democrats. Very, very interesting. Ryan Clancy, this guy's apparently the lead strategist for no labels. He said, quote, and he's admitting it. I love this. Come right out and say it. No pussyfooting. No journalistic tap dancing here. He said, quote, the only way this works is if, in the view of the public, the major party nominees are unappealing enough and a potential unity ticket is appealing enough and that there seems to be a viable path to an electoral college victory. That's interesting. So what you want to have here is I don't know what I would liken this to. Yeah, a third-party choice, but almost like a poison pill, what they call a political poison pill, where one side or the other won't vote for something because they know what it might mean for the other side. That's left Republicans and Democrats alike concerned that no labels could tee up a spoiler, especially as polls have showed a broad dissatisfaction with both President Biden and Republican Donald Trump. Good. We need more of that. Would you vote for, let me ask you something here, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. No Labels says it could nominate a unity ticket or get that ticket on the ballot in states with a centrist Republican and a centrist Democrat. Would you at least consider voting for that? Should that be the case in Connecticut? Now, remember, they have to get on the ballots in every state, and it's incredibly hard to do that because the two major parties are not wanting to loosen their grip on power. Now, I can imagine that if No Labels tries to get on the ballot here, I would suspect either at least the Democratic Party to go bananas and file every lawsuit possible to have that not happen. But No Labels, what do you think? Would you consider voting for a fusion ticket, one Democrat, one Republican, on the same ticket? We continue to invite kind of opinion leaders, newsmakers around the area to kind of put a spotlight at things, on things, Monday through Friday at 5 o'clock. We've added to the show on a permanent basis, Dan Haar from Hearst Connecticut Media, also Lenny Grimaldi from Only in Bridgeport. And we liked hearing from this guy so much, I said, hey, I went to the bosses and I tapped into my vast budget here. And I said, hey, let's have Chris Caruso on, former Bridgeport state rep. Chris, the first check came in the mail, right? That's all?
Absolutely, yeah. There was a little delay, but then I saw the post person and I went up to them and said, you have the check? They said, yeah, here it is, Chris. I said, okay, great.
Don't spend it all in one spot, Chris.
I'm trying not to.
But thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. People like your call. So we figure we'll hear from you, you know, your schedule regarding every Friday at 5:05. So, Chris, you have the floor. What have you kind of gleaned over the past week? What are some of the stuff that you've kind of perked your ears at and went, oh, geez, how about that?
Well, a couple of things, Paul. I thought it was very interesting that PURA, Public Utility Regulatory Authority, voted unanimously to do performance-based regulations with the utility companies. And what that means is that the utility companies will be judged based on their performances. So their profits, their earnings will be, you could hold them more accountable as a PURA can do, which I think is very important. Prior to that, it's been kind of a 100-year-old system that hasn't worked well for the people of the areas that are covered by those utility companies. So I think it's a move in the right direction. There's some infighting apparently within the PURA structure, the commissioners, but Gillette, who is the chairman of the commission, who was recruited by Governor Lamont to come to Connecticut and to make change, is the big advocate for this performance-based system. So I think it's exciting to look at. I think it's very positive. It has bipartisan support in the legislature, which is very promising and encouraging. So I think it's a move in the right direction. That caught my attention because all of your listeners, and yourself included, are utilities affect all of our lives in one way or another. So I thought it was pretty good.
So I guess, Chris, that the notion is going to be, I can break it down simply, the more attentive they are and the better performance they have for customer issues, I guess it's carrot and a stick, right? The more likely they are to get their rates approved or okayed.
Exactly. And you know, it affects their profits, which is always the way to, you know, if a person does a good job, then, you know, they get paid. And if they don't do a good job, then they're questioned and they probably get less. So in a way, it's a very good system. I think from what I understood, it's used in other states. And, you know, Connecticut has just been slow to do that because, again, it's our whole utility process has probably been over 100 years old. There's been modifications over the years, but not to the extent that this will do. And I think, you know, performance-based accountability is always important, you know, especially when there's outages and how fast do the utilities respond. There's issues with payment plans and, you know, do they get back to the customers in a timely way? You know, are they accessible to the customer? All those are positive things for the consumer, the people who use those utilities.
What else was on your mind, Chris?
Well, you know, I was looking more international, Paul, and, you know, being a Catholic, I kind of I always look to see what change is happening within the Catholic faith. And I thought it was interesting that Pope Francis has, will allow women to vote in the bishops' meeting. I think it's October 4th to the 29th.
10,000 old Italian Catholic women in Bridgeport just passed out, Chris, when you said that.
I was going to say. But, you know, the Catholic Church, I'm fascinated because it's very slow to change. And it just seems like Pope Francis is making positive change. And I think 21% of those voting in that Bishop Synod will be able to, you know, cast a vote, which I think is always important. It's good to get the women perspective. They're part of the Catholic faith, and they should have a say and at least give their opinions. And I think that's a really positive move. I think Francis in general has brought much change with the Curia, you know, the actual governance structure of the Vatican and also the banking system. And now with allowing women more of an input, I think is all positive steps in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Chris, let me ask you, I know you've also probably been watching what's been transpiring up at the State House, having been there for so many years. And now you have the push here by a lot of folks, Chris, teachers, municipality groups, you know, telling the governor, you know, we know you're trying to do the guardrail thing with spending, but we need more money for schools. And that's been the real mantra, Chris, for the better part of a week or so. What do you make on that as you watch it?
Yeah, I was just in Bridgeport last night. As a matter of fact, I spoke at a public hearing calling on the city council to allocate more money in its budget toward education. I think it's critical. And so, you know, there's always been under the ECS formula, there's always been the problem of, you know, school districts getting enough funding in order to keep the programs going. So I think there will be some compromise made, I think, throughout the whole budget process. Keep in mind, the Appropriations Committee had a deadline when they could get, you know, their bill out, their proposed budget. And so they did that. You know, they go by the governor's budget, so they make modifications, and they had a deadline. They got that out. But now the next step is Finance Committee will provide the revenue side of that budget, and then there'll be negotiations that will take place. Will the school districts get everything they want? I don't think so. But there's other groups out there, too, that are actively seeking money, the nonprofits, for example, that provide much state services, but they're not state employees. So they're looking for funding. There's other groups, daycare programs are looking for funding. There's a there's a wealth of need out there, and I'm sure there'll be compromise. That's usually how it will come to be. And you also see the university system demanding more money, UConn in particular, and the governor seems to be holding the line right now, and I think he's going to continue, and he's going to talk about the guidelines because that's a good negotiation strategy. But once he gets into negotiations, I'm sure they'll work things through, and not everyone's going to be happy, but, you know, when you negotiate, not everyone is. And the more people that are upset, it probably worked, you know, in some way the negotiation worked. And so there'll be more funding, but the dollar amount to be seen. That all has to be worked out by the leadership and the governor.
Yeah, the governor, Chris, finally. The governor, he continues to intrigue me because I think you can finally categorize this guy after 4+ years. He's a social liberal. He's progressive on many social issues, but even to the angst of some in his party, even though he does obviously negotiate, I mean, I think, Chris, we watch him, and he does kind of approach every dollar and cents thing, I'm guessing, is maybe he did when he was running Lamont Cable Systems on a day-by-day basis.
I think so. You know, he brings a business person's perspective to the job, and, you know, he's not a pushover when it comes to issues. He believes firmly in what he believes. One is moderation when it comes to spending and the guardrails that he spoke about, and I think that bodes well. I think that's a positive thing from his perspective. And I think the other thing is the mandate he received in the election. You know, yeah. He won overwhelmingly, and plus the COVID crises that the state and his handling of it. So he gained confidence by the public, and that makes him stronger at the bargaining table, frankly, with the leadership of both parties. And there's nothing wrong in that. I think that's the positive thing of a democracy, of a representative form of government. People are naturally going to disagree, and that's healthy. I think that's positive. As long as we can be reasonable in our comments and not attack one another, I think it's perfectly fine, because I think that's when you come out with the best product. I had served on the council for, I think it was 8 years, mm-hmm. and for about 2 of those years, Paul, it was a split between Republican and Democrat. There was 10 Republican, 10 Democrat.
Wow.
And I have to say, that really, and in Bridgeport, that was kind of wild. I thought I moved out of town or something.
You thought you were in Alabama somewhere.
Oh, yeah, I said, oh, my goodness, what happened? And you know, what it did, though, it put us both in a position, mm-hmm. both parties, to negotiate down the middle.
Yeah.
And we came out with probably some of the best legislation, and frankly, it was some of the best time I spent on the council. I felt I was actually able to represent people the way I could and get things done. And it meant we had to negotiate, we had to work with one another. But in the end, there was countless legislation that came out that was great for the people of the city.
Chris, thank you. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. All right, there you go. Chris Caruso, who'll be kind of one of our stable of commentators that we'll kick off the 5 o'clock hour with every day right here on WICC. You want to hear that again from Chris? Check out our Best of show coming up tonight. I believe it's 7:30. And our podcast, too, which producer Eric is putting together as we speak. You should see this guy. He puts the podcast together. He screens the calls. He runs the board. He's got a hot plate over there. He's got some sausage simmering over there. He's cutting some garlic cloves. It's amazing.